Blog Talk Radio.
Hello?
Yeah, hold on.
Damn.
Welcome. This is the Pulling Your Eyelids Open, number one podcast in the DMV. We give it to you straight talk, no chaser. We pull your eyelids open and give information that is seriously needed in the Washington, D.C. area. We have a special guest on our newsmaker line, Nat the Bush Doctor. Before we bring him up, we want to thank our sponsor, Tori's Restaurant, for the best soul food in the DMV for over 30 years. It's Tori's Restaurant, 700 V Street. Through the pandemic, they're still there, carry out, Uber Eats. Stop by 700 B Street Northwest for the best seafood and soul food you can get. On our newsmaker line, the one and only Nat the Bush Doctor. Welcome aboard, Nat. Go ahead.
Thank
Tell
you.
Tell us who you are and what you do.
Well, I guess I'm a hairstylist, barber. Artists, I do quite a few things. What I thought was amazing is your call yesterday. I opened my business 52 years ago on April Fool's Day, 1969. So that's 52 years, and you called me on that particular day. So I thought that was real nice.
Wow.
A lot of good information.
52 years ago, you had this vision. Tell us what gave you the vision of opening your business 52 years ago.
Well, what it was, let me start from the beginning. I used to sing in a group called the Stereophonics. I mean, we were something like the Manhattans, Temptations. We kind of got off to a real good start. I guess I was about 16, 17, and, people wanted us to do shows and all that kind of stuff. So when the group broke up, my goal was to be famous. I didn't know anything about what famous was, but my grandmother said, you're going to be famous. You got to help somebody. So I thought about that, and at that time, I had opened my shop, and I called it a hair hospital. It was the first hair hospital ever. So that brought news, quite a bit of newspaper and TV stuff at an early age. So, I did that for a while. But what really happened was I remember I was about, like I said, about 16, and I was, wanting to get my barbering business going. So I hadn't been to school, but I believed that I could do it, and my mother let me cut hair on the back porch. And so one day I was working, called myself working, and I was, doing it on the back porch, and this neighborhood bully kind of guy ran in, and everybody used to sit in the living room and wait for me to cut the hair. So what happened, he came in. Everybody used to come in, sit in the living room, waiting for the next person. So at that particular time, when he came in, some detectives came. And they were like, did you see somebody come through here we're looking for? And at the time, I was scared to death. I wasn't supposed to be cutting hair. And I said, no, I didn't see anybody. So after that time, what made me really get serious about it, I was going to Spingarn High School at the time. But Phelps was right next door. So I decided I'm going to barbering school. And that's what I did and, you know, really got into it. I became the, I guess, the teacher's pet sort of thing because I was already cutting hair. And he found that that was amazing to him. So I went on and went on. And as time went on, I started developing customers. And then I got my license. And when I got my license, you know, I was determined to really want to be somebody. So the Afro hair, you know, was happening at that particular time. So what happened was, and I didn't even realize it, was I invented what they call an Afro haircut. So I got my name, you know, out there for that. And that was a lot of impress and all that kind of stuff. And then by me singing at that particular time, I knew a lot of the people like Luther Ingram, James Brown, all these kind of people knew me because I had something called the executive service. The executive service was that I would come to your office and do your hair. And at that particular time, I was, you know, getting really known. And that's when I started doing celebrities' hair. And, you know, that caught on for a while. And then they did this big story on me in the Afro called the Bush Doctor Developed His Own Style, Haircutting Style. So that was very popular. And as time went on, you know, I met people like Alex Haley, just a whole lot of, you know, prominent people at that particular time. And I was young. I didn't really know what was happening. And I know somebody told me one time, they said, you know, you're famous. I said, famous? They said, yeah. And then as time went on, then this was later after, I got into the Museum of American History for the Afro haircut. Then I invented something because I said I wanted the patent office right here, and they had found out about me and about inventing the Afro haircut. So they found out about me, and they said, do you have anything else that you feel like you want to invent? So I said, yeah, I do. That's when my apron came in. You know, I invented this apron in 1972. I did all the paperwork myself, and next thing you know, I had a patent for my apron. That became really popular. So a company called Johnson Products, most people remember Afro Sheen, and then I became the Afro Sheen specialist for Johnson Products. And that took me into the beauty industry, becoming very known in the beauty industry. And then this company called Soft Sheen Products got me. And I stayed with them for 25 years. But they sent me all over the world, Africa, London, Paris, Japan, all those kind of places. I was, every week, I was going somewhere. Or I'd stay, you know, for a week in different foreign countries teaching people how to do at that particular time, it was something called a carefree curl. So I got known at that as being the curl doctor. And these type of things just kept coming, kept happening. And even recently, in the last year or so, they put me in several other museums, the Reginald Lewis Museum in Baltimore. They have my collection there. In 98, they put me in the Museum of American History. I thought that was, you know, something. So I've been in there since 1998 is when they put me in there. So it's just been happening. And then I found out that I could draw. I really always believed, you know, there's a belief system that we have. And I remember you back way, we did a show at the one of those centers, big center downtown, and I had a booth. And I know we were talking then. That had to be in the 80s.
We go way back, Nat.
I'm telling you.
You was an innovator and a professional. See, when I started, it's quite a coincidence. Like you say, you started your business 52 years ago, and I started publishing 45 years ago. And It's amazing that we stayed the course, but you were famous. Like you say, you was a star. You were one of the people who was up there. When I met you, I was just trying to publish the magazine, but you had already had a name for yourself, and you was connected to professional people. You had a business over in Peachy County. You was doing classes. You were doing things that no other black man was really doing. That's why it's so important to have you on this podcast, because people don't know the things that you do. They have read about it. They heard of you. They know your name. But we like to pull the eyelids open, because look at all the things you just discussed that you did, the museums you're in, and the things that you've done over the years. And that's what's wrong with today. We don't have the history of people that are right under our eyes. We don't know exactly the struggle they did, the work they put in. You was a profession. There was lots of barbers. There's still barbers today, but they don't take the pride in the industry that you did. Tell the audience what made you take pride in the industry, and why, though, let's say today, why do beauticians, barbers, why don't they have a pride in the craft today? They have these things, booth rentings, and people talking crazy. There's no such thing as professionalism in the beauty or barber business today. Why is that?
Well, you have to have belief in yourself and what you can do, and you have to have a plan. I always say, plan your work and work your plan. And that's one thing I like about you. You stuck to what you believe in. And that's how I met a lot of people that were about something, because I had the type of clientele. I remember several years back when I was really doing things, people had to wait in the line to get in the shop. It was a belief, like I said, hair hospital. Who had ever heard of a hair hospital? And then I got the title Bush Doctor. You know, I went on the Carol Henson show, me and Chuck Brown, years ago. I was doing the hair hospital thing, and he was just starting, well, not starting, because he had already been doing his thing for a long time. I did Chuck's hair for over 45 years, you know. Mm. And, you know, we would always, and Petey Green, people like that, we would always come to the shop, and we'd talk about what we were doing and how we were going to make it big and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I always found people that were doing things. Those were the type of people that I wanted to be around, you know. And I, even when I wrote my book, you know, I thought about how I could, you know, write my book and all that kind of, I believed I could do it. Next thing you know, I had a book that was very popular. It's in the museum. It's in the all the libraries around. And it just, you know, it's amazing how you can believe something and manifest it. You become what you think about most. And once you get something on your mind, like your magazine, it was on your mind. This is something that you were doing, that you could continue making happen. And people believed in you and all the things that you were doing. It's the same thing. You just have to, I always say, knowledge is power, but applied knowledge is power. You got to apply it to make it real and manifest itself. And these are the kind of things that always happen. And just like, that's not a coincidence that you called me 52 years to yesterday, you know, and that's how I believe things, you know, that can manifest themselves by the belief that you have in your mind and in your life. And you attract those kind of people into your life. And it was like my clientele, some people, I've done their hair for over 40, 45, 50 years that are still with me now. And they were kids, you know. Now they got kids and grandkids. And these people still come. They believe in, you know, in me. And now I'm excited about doing, you know, art, because you can manifest these things by believing that you could do it. And now, you know, some of my artwork, like I did a picture of Chuck Brown, and that's in the museum over there in Baltimore, the Reginald Lewis Museum. So, you know, most of the things, you know, trophies and medals and all kind of things that I've got, even I got yours that you gave me for, which I'll call it Roadrunner or something like that. But I'm just saying, I had to give a lot of that stuff away because it was, you know, I had so many things over 50 years that I just gave to the museum, even the museum in, what's that over there in Mount Rainier? They have a black museum there. They got me in there. So I'm just saying how if you believe something, you can manifest it. And you're a perfect example of that, because everything that you always talk about, it manifests itself. Just like when you have your parties and stuff like that, and all the people that you draw, they believe in you because you've been out there saying what you believe and making it happen, you know. So it's the same thing. It's just your belief and what do you want to happen. And I always say, what do you want? That's what you ask yourself. What do you want? Why do you want that? And how can you manifest that? And if you ask yourself quality questions, you will get quality answers that will grow and manifest itself in your life. And it's really up to you. I used to wonder how did they ask me this in several interviews. You know, how did you do all these things? And the only thing that I could think of was belief, you know, your beliefs. And, you know, I always believed that I would be somebody famous, I guess. I didn't ever think of it like, you know, just being famous to be famous. When my grandmother told me, she said, you got to help somebody. And so I used to wonder how. Then I started doing motivational workshops for a couple of these big companies. And they sent me all over the world talking about my beliefs and how other people can do the same thing. And once you start helping people to do things, these things manifest themselves. You hear me saying the word manifest, and that's what really happens. You see it in your mind's eye, and then you believe it, and the next thing you know, you're achieving it. It's just that simple. But people don't think like that. You know, the average person, they thinking about partying and drinking and smoking and all that kind of stuff. But why are you here? What's your purpose on earth? What do you want to happen, or what do you want to be before you leave here? And all of that's relevant when you start believing. So it's really up to you. I remember I would say this to you. You're so kind and considerate. Your generosity is simply overwhelming. It's only exceeded by your good looks and such pleasing personality. And that's who you are. And that's how people know you. So you have to figure out how you can help folks, and you do that a lot. You make people feel positive about themselves. I always listen to some of your podcasts and things. You help people believe in themselves. And I think that's what I used to do and still do myself. And it's really up to you. So anything that you want at this point in life, you just ask yourself, how can I manifest it? What do I have to do? And then you have to get rid of what I call get rid of stinking thinking and get a checkup from the neck up. That's what it's really all about. And these things start happening. And it's hard to believe. Just like before this pandemic, I was rising again, you know, after all these years. You still do something to help folks. But the thing is things start happening in your life. I got several calls from other libraries that want me to come and speak to people. And the speaking thing is what really, I guess, got me out there, you know, just telling people what you believe and how they can achieve the same thing that you can achieve just by doing little things. And these little things add up to big things. Before you know it, you know, people want you. They want you around. And that's the same thing about building a clientele, you know, with clients. I mean, the type of clients that I have and had over the years has been amazing. I remember one of my clients told me, he said, man, you got enough stuff to write a book. And then this guy named Jim Link, he just died a few years ago, and he helped me out. You know, he was a newspaper writer. So I would always get newspaper people coming and TV people coming. Matter of fact, they did a big thing on me last year on Channel 5. I'll send you the link, you know. But it was talking about the things that I've done over the years and how I'm still in business after 52 years. And like I said, the clients and all of that. And I used to always say, you got to prepare for the old man. The old man is the old man in you that's coming. So have you prepared for the old man? And I know that used to be one of the things I would always say. Now I'm 75 years old, and I'm prepared. I prepared myself. House note. No house note, because one of my goals was to be debt-free in America by the time I was 50. I'm 75 now, debt-free, been debt-free. So those are the kind of things that you want to really focus on, because how much time do we have left? So it's up to you. If you want to be in poverty in your old age and you never did anything to make it, you know, make the old man right, then you're screwed, no matter what you think. Because you always got to pay rent. And if you, you know, like all these pandemics and stuff coming through, if you hadn't prepared earlier, then what? So what I'm saying is just stay focused. Get some beliefs in your mind that you want to happen for yourself at this time. They would always say on the airplane, when if something happens, put your mask on first. And then you can help somebody else. So you got to look ahead and see what you want to happen. Look back at your future. I mean, the former future. And say, okay, what is it? What's going to happen now? And it's up to you. So I know I'm jumping around a lot, but years is so much.
That's fantastic. I mean, like you said, you were debt, at least 75 years old and debt free.
Yeah.
That is a fantastic thing.
Mm-hmm. Because that was my goal, you know, being debt-free in America by the time you're 50 years old. And then from there, you know, you go on. And then you protect yourself even more. So, you know, I always call it an albatross around your neck. You know, the rent and all these people that you owe and all of that. How did that happen? You wasn't paying attention. You know what I mean, about the old man. So what he going to do when he gets 75, 80 years old if you haven't prepared for him to come? So, you know, it's always tips and tricks that you have to learn to prepare yourself for later on in life. And
there's so many people in their old age that didn't prepare for life. And life becomes It's a struggle.
Oh, yeah.
And
it really is.
Struggle. You know what? You know, I tell you right now, I'm only 72.
You there? I lost you for a minute. What did you say?
And also not in good health.
Oh, yeah, that's the main thing, you know. That was something that was very important to me, is like your vitamins, you know, your immune system, really getting focused on what you can do to help yourself. Because, you know, what you eat is so very important to who you are now. You know, people eating all this McDonald's and all that stuff. You need to, you know, have good meals. You need to sleep well, all of those kind of things. And a lot of people, they don't think about it. And you look at yourself and gain a lot of weight and all that. What is that coming from? It's like not eating right, not thinking right. Okay, every day, one day go, and here come another day, and you haven't done anything towards what it is you say you want to do. So you got to really think about it. The old man, he's here. And if you, like you say, 72, I call that the youth of old age. You're just becoming old. So what are you doing at that point? You're kind of breaking up. I hear you, but you're kind of breaking up.
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Like I said, you're old, but you're just starting to be old. 72, you're not really old yet, but you're headed toward being an old man.
Yeah, that's the youth of old age. And the thing about it in the youth of old age is like, what do you want or what didn't you do that you can do now that will help you? You got to start believing things different and seeing things different. That's what makes the difference.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. I tell you, Matt, you're such a famous individual. There's so many people want to talk to you, call you on the air. Matt, the voice doctor is on the news line, call you on the air. Go ahead.
Dr. Mathis, how you doing, man?
All right, who's this?
This is Tahaka out of Florida.
All right, now. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, man. I'm just sitting here listening to you. You a bad man.
Well, I always believe the man that knows how will always have a job, but the man that knows why will always be the boss or supervisor. So who you want to be in your own life?
All right, well, you ain't left me nothing but a story to tell.
All right, now, we all got our story. Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right, here we
all
go.
All the way from Florida. All the way
That's
from
right.
Florida.
Tahaka Amana L. Bate, a Moorish national in charge of the entire eastern seaboard of the United States. I'm pleased to meet you, man.
No, nice meeting you, man. Keep doing what you're doing. That's what they used to tell me.
Well, let me tell you this story.
Mm-hmm. So what's your story?
I was born July the 8th, 1953.
Okay.
My daddy and me, we didn't have a whole lot of connection, but he was on his own business all his life.
Mm-hmm.
But one day, he said, boy, come here, I'm going to show you something. I said, okay, Daddy. He took me in the back of his shop. Yeah, big old shop back there, more building than he can have.
Uh-huh.
And he began to take these sheets off of these paintings.
Uh-huh.
They was the most beautiful paintings I ever seen in my life.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they was better than Rembrandt. I said, Daddy, did you paint this? He said, no.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I did. He said, but I got a man who did.
Uh-huh.
I said, why are you back here? Why don't you put these out? He said, we can't do that. I said, well, what?
Fantastic. Well, I tell you, Matt, you are so well loved, and all around the world, people want to talk to you. Call you on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah,
Matt,
I'm here.
Go ahead. Go on the air with Matt Busbacker. Go ahead.
Okay, who am I talking to?
He didn't come on.
Okay.
But what I was saying to you, Matt, you are really an inspiration to so many people. And people that you have touched over the years have really benefited from your knowledge, from your teachings, from your book, from your school, all the things that you have done. And you're still doing things. Like you said, you are an inspiration to people who are in their 70s. I mean, you kept your weight down. I mean, that's a big thing, man. The average person in their 70s has got a weight problem. But you thought just to keep your weight down.
Mm-hmm.
And also, also you saw the vision of keep on going. I mean, you kept on going. I mean, how did you meet Chuck Brown?
Oh, man, let's see. I was singing in a group at the time called the Stereophonics. Chuck, let's see, he was in the Los Latinos band. Joe and what's that bass player's name? I knew all of them, Pinchback, all of the guys. And, you know, like we used to call it Boy in the Band group. You know, we had a singing group and the band and all those kind of things, and that was my life. It's like I thought that I was going to be a singer. That was what, you know, I really wanted to be, is a singer. So when you really think about it, a singer is really giving a speech.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it. You know, whatever they're talking about or singing about is like a speech. So eventually, mm-hmm. after the singing group, then I became a speaker. You know, instead of singing the verses, I would talk the verses and what I believed in and how you could, you know, make a better person out of yourself by doing the things that you know is right. And that's the first thing that we learn as kids, what's the difference between right and wrong. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that once you start believing and making yourself focus on what it is, plan your work and work your plan, that's mm-hmm. what makes things happen. But you got to be consistent, like you. You got to be consistent about what you're doing. And
you
people,
can't stop. You can't stop.
You can't stop. It's just a focus. I call it laser focus. You know, you focus on something hard enough, it'll happen. It might not happen when you want it to happen, but if you stick with it, it'll happen. And it'll take you to places that you would not believe. I mean, I've done things that I couldn't even tell you how great it was at the time I was doing it. Like big shows in London. I won a competition in Paris. You know, just being around the right people at the right time. And it always come because your belief system is wide open. I used to tell people to ball your fists up. If you want something, you got to open your hand to get it, right? So mm-hmm. you got to keep your mind open all the time and focused on what it is you want to be, have, or do. It's just that simple, but it's so simple that you can miss it. And we all mm-hmm. have our good. You know, we have to live for our good. So it's up to us to find out what our good is and how we can manifest it and make it happen in our lives. So it's really up to you. And I used to say, ain't nobody going to ride in on no white horse and say, get on. You got to have your white horse for you and what it is you're trying to do. And it will take you wherever you want to go. I remember I used to do people like Luther Ingram. No, what's that boy's name? Not Luther Ingram.
Luther Vandross?
No, it was, I can't even think of his name, getting old. Just, you know, like the Staple Singers and James Brown, all those
Pop
kind of
Staple.
People. Huh? Luther.
Yeah, I remember Pop Staple.
Yeah, I did their hair. Mavis, all of them. And
oh,
that
man,
was the kind of thing. And
people
stand in line to get in my shop.
Well, you had a good connection. You had a real good connection with the people. I mean, and you have, by being in the music industry, that gave you an opportunity to meet those people.
It did. It really did.
But
and
you had the personality, and you had the, not only personality, you had the skills to do their hair. You were somebody who had the skill to do their hair. And then you were famous at the time, you know. And DC back then, tell us about how DC was for black businesses back then.
It was kind of tight, but like I hear you say this a lot, and because I believe this is like marketing and advertising is the key, and you have to have unique ideas that will make people want to find out who you are and believe in what you're talking about. And I would always come up with some unique ideas to market my services. You know, like I said, the hair hospital. You know, the executive service, you know, those kind of things. And people wanted to be around people that were doing things. And like I said, I remember the guy that gave me the name of my book after we talked about it. He said, "I got a name for you, for your book." And I said, "What is that?" He said, "Portrait of a Professional, The Life of Nathaniel Mathis, Nat the Bush Doctor Story." That's how that came about. And a lot of things, you know, happened for me. I invented a game also. And that's in the museum. But the game was, it would show you how, this is how it came to me. It's like, so I said, "Boy, if you could figure out a way to turn your beliefs into a game or something like that." And I thought about it and thought, I said, if you could do that, boy, you would help a lot of people. And I invented this game called the Wheel of Life. Did I ever give you one of my books?
Oh yeah, I got the copy of the book, man. I read the book, man. You inspired me to write my book. I haven't written it yet, but it's on my to-do list. I've done a lot of things, inspiration for people like you and Kathy Hughes and people that I came in contact with that helped me along the way. And I was able, by producing a magazine 45 years ago, it enabled me to get in contact with celebrities. Like, you had the barber skill, I had the publishing and the magazine skill, and I was allowed to come into the Kathy Hughes Morning Show every morning and interview anybody that came on the show. So when they came on the Kathy Hughes Morning Show, after they came off the air, they sat on the couch with me for an hour. That was phenomenal back then. That was phenomenal back then. Montel Williams, James Brown, anybody that came on the show, she gave me carte blanche. But I had a magazine called Russell's News. It was the only publication that was accessible to everybody, and that's what made my uniqueness work, because I was able to publish something that nobody else was paying attention to. I mean, James Brown came in town to do the morning show, but after he left, the Washington Post wasn't there. There was nobody that interviewed him for being there. Kathy Hughes' morning show was not that kind of a show at that time, where they thought it was something that was viable to put in the Washington Post or to put in a magazine or the Washingtonian magazine. We didn't get that kind of press, you know.
Yeah.
So
I was in the Washington, all of that.
All that. They didn't give us that kind of acknowledgement. That's why today, I'm like you, I'm trying to get my stuff in the museum, the African American Museum, because I have the pictures and the documentation of all the history of 45 years ago. I've got the pictures. I've got my this podcast that you're on is over 25 years even doing the podcast. 25 years ago, people didn't know what a podcast was. They still don't actually know. But it's the bottom line is that these things are documented now. Like, when we go off the air, I'm going to put this on our Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I'm going to send you a copy of the link. They can hear this. And your story will go on forever. It's never going to leave the airwaves.
Yeah. And I'm going to ask you something that will really help you at this point in your life. And it's simple. A question, and I want you to think about it. Don't give me a quick answer. You can, you know, think about it even after we talk. What do you want? It's not something that you can just answer. You got to think about it.
It's like the question I asked on Facebook the other day. What do you know for sure? I mean, you have to think about it. You can't just answer that question. You just can't come off the top of your head with what do you want. And you say, I want this, I want that. You have to think about it.
Because the next question is why, you know? And then all of that will determine what it is that you want. And then you'll start thinking of ways to manifest it. So you ask yourself sensible questions, you'll get sensible answers from yourself. Because it's all about you.
That's what makes you so unique. You knew what you wanted at some point. And it manifested, and you kept on perfecting what you want. You didn't stop that. You didn't stop. I mean, no matter what challenge you came up with or what challenge came in your life, even the pandemic, when I called you, you said you got customers. You got customers right now during the pandemic. You're still doing what they call your craft, and that's what's important. You know how to do your craft, and you're still doing your craft. But you also intervene in yourself to give back to people and to empower people. Like right now, my fame and what I know for and what my brand is I am a marketer. They call me the king of all marketing. I'm the king of, then nobody can out-market Russell. I mean, because my mind is so innovative, I can always think of something creative to market something.
Yep,
and I can do that. That's my gift. You know, and you have to know your why and what you get there. But I was able to do, like you were talking about, I was able to become a talk show host. I was able to become a magazine publisher, a motivational speaker. I was there, and I watched people's careers catapult. Like I watched you go in your career, and I come by your office, so I see you doing things that I wanted to do, and you inspired me to do that. I met people like Willie Jolly when he first started out with Les Brown at the Warner Theater. Now look at what Willie Jolly today is, a good friend. I knew him back in the day. I watched Aaron Barrett with Catfish Mayfield when he was working with Pride. I was there for all that, but I watched those people elevate themselves. I remember Kathy Hughes when she only had the one station, standing in front of the station when she was living in the station. I was there, but I was able to get a talk show. I was able to get a talk show for 20 years on the radio with her. So you are an inspiration to so many people, Nat. You're still an inspiration. Your book, tell us a little bit about how to get your book on your website and how to get in touch with you.
Well, I don't have a website anymore, and I do things a lot different. After being in the business for many years, you have to change up. And like I said, now, I just focus on my art and all of these things, and I get real ideas, like you were saying about ideas that come to you. So knowing what you want, you know, like I used to have people in my seminar, and this is what I used to say to myself, and I have them to say it. To say, I'm going to be one of the greatest hairstylists that ever lived, and believe that. Those are the kind of things you tell yourself. It's called self-talk and believing in yourself.
Well, that's what it's all about. It's about believing in yourself. It's about knowing who you are, knowing what your goal is, knowing what you want to be known for. When people see you coming, they should know what you do. They should know who you are. And that's what I call branding yourself. You should always brand yourself and let people know what your brand is. What are you known for? What can you do? And
there
then parlay that into helping others. My goal and what I do every day is I touch people's lives and I promote people and brand people. And I was able to create this thing called the Be There Magazine Oscars. For the last 45 years, I gave out over 450 Oscars. There's not a person that's relevant in this town that somebody has not got some kind of award from me, because I want to recognize their good and their worth. And some people, it was the only award they got. It's the only award they ever got. They still go coming full of time and say, hey, this is the only award I've ever got. I mean, I've had recording artists that tell me that they never got an Oscar for the award. You know, I mean, you're talking about people who got famous records out. You know, but they never got no Emmy or no Oscar or anything that recognized their craft. And they got hit records. But when I was able to give these people awards, you know, give them a recognition, you know. So it was important. It was important. Very important.
Mm-hmm. And Chuck told me something one time that he used in his shows. And he said, giving people recognition. You know, like on some of his songs, he says, John and Benny, this goes up and so on. And he was saying, always give people praise. And those little things.
That was the Go-Go trademark, man. What they did was, when they were playing the Go-Go music, what they did was you hand them a little piece of paper. And they would say, while they were playing the Go-Go, they would say, this goes out to Little Benny, or this goes out to Southeast. This goes out, and that made the people come and buy the CD. The little cassette back then. They would sell the cassettes for $10, but the people would buy the cassette because they would hear their name on the cassette.
Yeah.
It's something that you asked me that I forgot to answer for you.
You asked me, you said, how did you meet Chuck Brown? Now I'm going to tell you how I met Chuck. I used to work at a shop called Superior Barbershop on Benning Road. It was next to Benco Shopping Center. And I had a sign that I put in the window called the Hair Doctor, you know, because I was promoting, and that time I didn't have my own shop, but I was still promoting the hair hospital and the hair doctor. So what happened was Chuck used to come in and get his hair cut, but he worked at a laundry company. He used to drive a laundry truck. And, you know, we used to always talk about singing in the back and how we wanted to be famous and all that kind of stuff. Like I said, Pete Green used to come to the shop, too, and we all get in there and talk about, you know, that kind of stuff because we were young at the time. But the thing is, that's how I met Chuck. And then we, from that time on, you know, he would come to my shows. I would go to his shows. And just the friendship just took on from that particular point. And we were friends ever since. And I, you know, even his sons, you know, when Nikos and Wiley, you know, and I remember I took a picture of them and his older son, Chuck Jr., he died. I took a picture of all of them together, and he never forgot that, you know. So that was one way that, you know, we hooked up and stayed friends for years, you know. So,
wow.
He was a great, I mean, Chuck was a genius. Chuck was a genius. I mean, I, you know, like at that particular time in my life, I was like a spokesman for my singing group. And I had to try to bring people that look good and sound good and all that stuff. So I had, you know, in my mind, I was the kind of person that would be the spokesman, you know, to bring people in and all that kind of stuff. So I'm saying all that to say, like, people like Willie Jolly. I knew all those guys. Mm-hmm. I knew all those guys because people had heard about me and they would come to me and all that. So I remember me and Willie was, I think, I forgot where we were, but Anthony Robbins. He's a, you know, motivational speaker. That's who we met at the when he first met Anthony Robbins, and we all had a picture together. And that was when I was learning about motivation and, you know, the National Speakers Association. Into that, transferred from black to white, you know, hair, and got known in that group of people. And you know, it just took off, man, all over the world. I mean, I went everywhere. So, and those are the little things you don't even think about what you're doing at the time. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, and another thing that I was doing also was, like, running marathons because I was trying to get myself focused on myself and meditation and motivation and all those kind of things and keeping your body strong, everything. It was all, that's what I was teaching people, you know, how to be a better person is what it was really all about, kind of like what you do.
Right. And, that's important in life, that to give back and to empower someone else with information. Information is power. And if mm-hmm. you give people information, it can change their life.
Yeah, the only thing about that, you got to apply the information. You know, knowledge is power. Knowledge is a power, but the applied knowledge is the real deal. You got to mm-hmm. apply the knowledge that you got, because if you just leave the knowledge in your mind, ain't nothing going to happen.
No.
You
got to
apply that knowledge.
You got to apply the knowledge.
That's it.
I want to thank you, Nat, because this has been a heck of a podcast. One on Newsmaker Line, the one and only Nat the Bush Doctor. Do you have any closing statements, Matt?
Well, I said it earlier, the man that knows how will always have a job, but the man that knows why will always be the boss or supervisor because of the knowledge.
Wow.
And it's up to you to get, you know, find where you're supposed to be and start working on it from today on. Never stop. Be like Russell. Never stop.
I tell you, you don't want to stop. You want to keep on going and keep on going and keep on going. Because if you stop, your dream stops. If you
that's
let
right.
your dream go, then you go. Your dream
that's
goes
right.
when you let your dream go, then you go. Then the people won't even know what you have done if you don't. I mean, I tell people all the time, don't give up your dream. Don't give up your life. I mean, keep your life where you know what it's supposed to be. But if you don't do that, then you're going to miss out on a lot of things in life. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And one other thing, I want to thank you so much for having me on your show, because like I said, that's people learn something about you that they didn't know because of you.
Well,
you know what I mean? And keep
I
doing what you're doing. I used
to
do Robert Hooks's hair. And that's how I knew Kathy Hughes and Dewey Hughes and all those people. You know, I was brought in contact with all the Carol Randolph, Max Robinson.
Oh, my God. You're Max Robinson.
Some band. All those people, I used to do their hair. You know what
you
I mean?
Knew
and they
a
would
lot
keep
of people,
what's going on.
A lot of people. You knew a lot of people. Again,
yeah, man.
I want to thank you. I want to thank you, Nat, for taking the time out. It was very, very powerful, very informative, as usual. We pull your eyelids open. My name is Russell Price. I'm the publisher of Union Magazine, and we're celebrating 45 years of publishing. Stay tuned for pulling your eyelids open. We'll see you Monday morning at 10 o'clock. Wake up, everybody.
Peace.